America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Each and every day here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, we do a little thing called The List. Let's fire it up. Tiger basketball. Yeah, Tim, I know this game was going on while you were on air. It was also on Plus, so it was nice to have everybody get infuriated with Plus streams going out throughout the game. But Memphis outscores Missouri 51-33 in the second half to knock off the Missouri Tigers 83-75. P.J. Haggerty with 22 of his 25 in the second half. And I think really the thing that's interesting about this is I paid attention to the crowd during this game. Because the first half was going about as poorly as it could go for Memphis, where they're turning the ball over left and right, they're giving up layups, they can't get back on defense, and they're outscored 42-32 in the first half. And honestly, I felt like it was fortunate at certain times to just be a 10-point game because they were completely fine. They come out in the second half, they figure out Missouri was running like a 3-2 zone. Haggerty was able to get into the lane and get what he wanted at will. It was a perfect 9-for-9 from the free throw line. And then defensively, Memphis was essentially made Missouri useless on offense. And they walk away with a nice win. Like, but I think this is kind of the bigger thing that I was noticing. Right now with where the Penny Hardaway era is, people aren't out, but people are like, remarkably frustrated. There are some that are out, but that's not the general part of the fan base. And you could even sense it in the first half. It was like, it felt as if it was a continuation from that horrible second half of the year that they have with everybody just getting frustrated. And then the second half, you know, that's kind of the question. It's like, what is Missouri? We have no idea. Because last year, people were getting excited about a road win at Missouri, which at the time, you're thinking, man, that was a tournament team last year. I believe they won the first game of the tournament, and then I think they got Princeton. But that's a tournament team. You know, it's a tough road environment. It was a Friday night before a football weekend. It was a sold-out crowd. You were sitting there thinking, like, that is a great win. Well, we now know that Missouri is over for the SEC last year. And so I think that's kind of where everybody is that, hey, much better to win rather than lose. But it does feel like more so everyone's kind of trying to take a cautious approach because last year the non-conference schedule probably on paper looked better than it was in reality. I still think that it wasn't a fraudulent smoke and mirrors team. I think it was a team that just utterly collapsed and they had no leadership and they had, you know, then when you get into conference play and you don't really have a ton of margin for error in this league, it just things started going the wrong way and they weren't able to get it back off the rails. But overall, I still think the things that I'm seeing about this team, it's not going to be a particularly great shooting team. I do think it has a chance to be the type of team that Penny wants, which is one that will guard you. And even though they were giving up a lot of easy baskets in the first half, but that was more of not getting back on defense, like trying to go for the offensive rebound, letting guys leak, and then it was turnovers. So in the second half when they really had to play good defense, they were able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and we've talked so much about what this schedule looks like. I watched a little bit of UNLV last night, did not come away overly impressed by their win over Alabama State. But to come out here, get a road win, I like the way this schedule's situated where, you know, you've got an opportunity to win road games against teams like UNLV,
yeah,
a team like San Francisco. It's going to be a neutral, but I don't know how that'll come out resume-wise. You know, Clemson, Virginia, as we've talked about. So, and I mean, obviously the Maui Invitational. But, yeah, to turn it around in the second half like they did hopefully propels them into a win on Saturday, and then you're 2-0 hosting Ohio on, you know, that following week. Ohio, who, by the way, lost yesterday to James Madison by 10. So, yeah, I mean, I think I get it. You know, it feels like, what, this is year six for Penny? Seven?
I want to say it's year seven because one of the years, like, you kind of do the math. It's like one of the years was the COVID year, but I believe it's year seven.
Right. So last year, very disappointing, 11-7 in the AAC, you know, got as high as what, like 20 something in KenPom last year. So they kind of moved up. You know, 2023 is a big what if year. We talked about it. If they had beaten Florida Atlantic, who knows if they make the run to the Final Four, like I thought they could. So starting off 1-0 against a team that is probably going to be one of the worst in the SEC, but it's still a win over an SEC team at home. You overcame a little bit of adversity, and now you've got a chance moving forward to, you know, go into a game against the defending champions 4-0,
yeah,
you know, the week of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, also not a great night for the league, not a terrible night, but UAB loses to Vermont. It was a bye game.
Yeah,
but Vermont's why is Vermont a bye game?
Someone needs to. Are we sure there was a bye game? I know Rothstein put it out there. So
I was going with him, but that surprised me. That,
like,
listen, Vermont, I know Andy Kennedy. That doesn't strike me as an AK move.
Vermont shouldn't be a bye game for anybody right now, unless you're like Duke. Like, if you're a AAC team, you're not spending money to bring Vermont in. So I'd question whether or not that was a true bye game. I don't know if it's a home and home or a two for one or maybe something like that. But like, I saw that tweet come out from Rothstein, and you know, he's knows much more about it than I do. But I'm like, if it was a bye game, it was very little. Like, if you're playing Vermont, like John Becker in that Vermont program, I bet you it's almost impossible to have a bye game right now.
Yeah, and then South Florida was feisty against Florida. They played in Jacksonville. I mean, you can't ask for like a worse scenario for South Florida, but that game was feisty for a little bit, so they might have a little something. But overall, you know, I thought it was a good night for Memphis. Yeah, you would have liked to have a cleaner first half, but they made the adjustments in the second half and they won convincingly. To me, it was mission accomplished. The line was 4, you won by 8, mission accomplished. The Memphis Grizzlies. All right, so last night the Grizzlies fall. They got a stop and got a look, which was a pretty non-competitive look, to at least they could have either tied the game or won it out. They could have tied the game, sent it to overtime, or won outright. But really, I think the big story last night is Zach Edey with clearly his best performance as a pro. 11 of 12 from the field, 25 points. He adds 12 rebounds. It was the type of performance that makes you go, okay, if they can get that from Zach Edey, I mean, they're not getting 25 and 12 every night, but if you can get the looks like he should be on the floor. And to me, the other big thing was, even though he was putting up points, it was not net negative. Because there's been a few games where he's scored a little bit and he's gotten beat on the defensive end. That was not last night. I do think it's important to point out the Nets caveat of the Nets are allowing. That's a good opportunity to get your points as a big. Last week, Jaren Jackson got 30 in only 28 minutes. Jaren was not great last night, offensively at least. But I think the big thing for the Grizzlies is, when you consider now that they are with Bane out, with Smart out, that now means Bane, Smart, Gigi, Vince Williams, Luke Kennard. They're now without five of what their presumptive top 10 were coming in. I weirdly felt better about last night's loss than I did when they lost to the Nets at home last week, because like that was just the sweet spot. The Nets play an overtime game. Yeah. You get them, you're rested, you haven't played, you get them on the second night of a back-to-back. That's the one that really hurts you. Last night, I think, was a typical, you can kind of chalk it up to an NBA loss. Like, you shoot 8 of 30 from 3, they go 13 of 36. It was a two-point loss. And if what you are starting to see from Edie, which is, I think he's being much more physical, being more assertive, if you can get that, that's something that you can really build on and feel better. The key is going to be, how long are all of these guys out? Because I think if you can kind of tread water while these five guys are out, then it's like, I think you're well positioned, because the difference was last year when Ja was suspended for 25 games, the Grizzlies largely not only gave ground, gave all of the ground. Right now, they're only a half game out of third. And yes, the schedule was a little bit softer up front, but historically, this team starts to play better when you get into December and January. As long as they can kind of keep their heads above water, don't fall too far behind. Once you start to get guys back healthy, that's when I think you can really start to assess like where this team is. And for now, it's like you're just going to have Ja and Jaren on the floor a lot to survive, because when they don't, you can't afford the night where Wells goes 0 for 6 from the field and Santi goes, or maybe Wells was 0 for 7. Let's see. Santi 0
for
was
5 0, for Wells from yeah. 3. Santi Aldama was 0 for 6.
0 for 6. And like, it's, I'm not putting the loss on those two guys, but it's one of those situations where if nobody else is going to step up shooting, you can't have both of those guys being non-shooters from the three.
Yeah, I think the frustrating part probably is you just got swept by the Nets.
Yes.
Right? Like,
well, and there's the thought of the Nets being non-competitive, but sometimes the worst spot to play non-competitive teams is early in the year.
I'm pretty sure the Brooklyn Nets have 4 wins, and they're against the Bucks, and maybe they didn't sweep the Bucks. They just beat the Bucks. So I think they have a win over the Bucks and 2 over the Grizzlies.
Yes. Like,
maybe this team isn't as bad as we thought they were going to be.
Well, I mean, like, when you start to look at, like, Dennis Schroeder's a credible NBA player.
Sure.
And you know, Dorian Finney-Smith. Yeah, Cam Johnson's a good player.
Cam Thomas could just get buckets. Like, that's what he did in college and when he got drafted there. So that's kind of what we knew would happen. So, yeah, I think your assessment is fair. Like, getting punked at home.
That was the one.
When they just played an overtime game against the Denver Nuggets where they blew a big lead and you can't get that one. You sometimes lose in the NBA on the road. Like,
yes,
it just happens, right? So, yeah, I think that the interesting thing too is, like, you know, I don't know how much we've talked about it, but like, when you look at the rookie of the year market in the NBA, there's clearly not anyone that we think is going to run away with it. Like, it happened last year where, you know, Victor, well, at this point it was Chet, but
yeah,
it was either Chet or Victor who were going to win that award. Like, Zach Edey still remains the favorite to win rookie of the year. And then it's like Sar and Richesse, probably just because they were the number 2 and number 1 pick respectively. And it's like kind of a big shoulder shot. Like, I don't know.
Well, I think that's the other thing that's helped Edey. The fact that, like, I think the conversation would be much worse if you had one or two guys that were like rookies that were playing well. We're not really seeing a whole lot of that right now.
Yeah, no. The Wizards are so bad.
Yeah.
Even though they've won 2 games, much to my chagrin, because I have their win total under. But the Wizards are so bad that, like, Sar and Bub Carrington might just put up numbers because they're that awful. Like, what was that year that, oh God, what was his name? Is it Michael Carter Williams?
Oh yeah.
When he won rookie of the year because he just played on Philadelphia and they were like,
correct,
oh, here you go. Just go get buckets, buddy.
Well, and also that was, if you ever played 2K like whatever year that was, like I felt like every year you started, like you were always with Philly and Michael Carter Williams. And so it's just like, and he just got all the shots. But yeah, that to me, this is like, not all rookie of the years are going to be the same. But to me, the key thing is they play the Lakers next. They come back home. They're playing the Lakers. And it's always a good environment when the Lakers come to town.
Sure.
The question is what does Anthony Davis do? Because Anthony Davis has, when he plays against the Grizzlies, it's like Jaren Jackson Jr. is one of the best defenders on the planet. AD kind of owns him. And if you're trying to build some, if you're trying to build back-to-back like good games for Zach Edey, I'm not sure Anthony Davis is the medicine.
No.
But now the question is, he's got the foot. Is he going to sit? All I can say is, big fella, a foot and a big man, you know, you got to really rest up. Like, take it easy. Make sure you're good to go. So you need that. And like, to me, like, they're still in a plus. They still have a plus point differential, and that's kind of usually what I look at. And then you go and you look at the Thunder, who are undefeated with like a plus 17 point differential. You're like, oh, they might just run away with this like the entire West. But that really wasn't what the Grizzlies were playing for. The Grizzlies, I think, were largely playing to avoid the play-in. Like that's that, and anything beyond that, and I think it's going to be a fairly jumbled mess, which is kind of what we're seeing so far. So we'll see that. All right, Monday Night Football. All right, do you find it odd that we don't have more Kansas City's going to go undefeated talk?
I was asked it this morning, and I said no, because obviously I don't think they will. That said, you look at their schedule.
That was the key for me.
And I'm like, I mean,
they've got a game at the Bills.
At the Bills, they'll be probably an underdog.
At the Steelers, I think.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think the craziest number or factoid regarding the Chiefs, they won the Super Bowl last year. We all know that. Do you know who the last team to beat the Kansas City Chiefs was?
I do. The Las Vegas Raiders.
Yes, on Christmas Day.
Yes.
In
Kansas
City.
Killed a lot of parlays for me, for Christmas Day parlays.
Yeah. Your Uncle Bob sitting over there with the eggnog on his shirt was like, this is a no-doubter. I got the Chiefs in 17 money-line parlays.
No, that was Uncle
Skippy.
Jeffrey.
But I'm looking at the schedule, and I'm like, yeah. Broncos this weekend.
It's at the Bills, and that's a short week.
At the Panthers, whatever. Home to the Raiders, I guess it's not whatever, because that's actually no. What day of the week is Raiders? Is that on Thanksgiving? Raiders Chiefs? No.
The 29th isn't Thanksgiving, is it?
Oh, it's Black Friday.
Oh, yeah.
That's the Black Friday game.
There it is.
I was like, what's happening there? I mean, I think the bigger thing about the Chiefs is they're I hate using the L word, but they're pretty darn close to a lock to be the one seed.
And oh, like, I mean, they put the percentages up. Like
it's like, here we go again, man. Like, they didn't need it last year, and they went on the road. And it was like, well, you know, I won't believe in Mahomes until they go on the road. And he did it last year. He went to Buffalo. He went to Baltimore. And they won both of those games. Mm-hmm. They were 9-6 at one point last year. On Christmas Day, they were 9-6. They won the damn Super Bowl. And, like, I look at this offense. I'm like, I don't think it's great. But then you see Nuke Hopkins have a performance like he did yesterday. Oh, by the way, Travis Kelce just had a career high in receptions. I was told that he was too busy gallivanting with Taylor Swift and being in a show on FX to be productive. Well, he just had 14 catches for 100 yards yesterday. He's okay. Kareem Hunt had a big day. Patrick Mahomes didn't turn the ball over. Yeah, man. Like, I don't want to give it to him again, but like, it feels like it's the Bills or nobody else that's going to get in their way. Actually, that's not true. I still like Baltimore. I really like this Baltimore team.
And yeah, I don't care if it's mean or whatnot. It's like, until Lamar does it in the playoffs, I don't care.
Well, the thing is, for Kansas City, you get the one seed. So what's going to happen? You're not going to have to face Baltimore and Buffalo like you did last year. You only have to face one of them, more than likely. Unless Pittsburgh continues to play out of their rear end, which I don't see happening. So more than likely, you're probably playing like Houston or the top wild card in the divisional round. And Buffalo, Baltimore, and it's we got a long ways to go. Things will play itself out. But I think the power rating would be in no particular order, Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo, and then it's kind of a space to the next team, in my opinion, in the AFC. And if Kansas City's the one seed, guess what? They're probably not going to face Baltimore and Buffalo in the postseason.
No, but what if Thursday is a massive, massive game? Because if the Bengals can knock off the Ravens and get back in this thing, if they're the seven seed and then they win, you know, whoever they knock off, who's going to be the weakest? Is it going to be the who's going to be the weakest division winner? The Texans, probably?
Texans, yeah.
So let's say Burrow knocks off the Texans, and then Burrow goes into Burrowhead.
But are you giving the Bengals a number one wild card?
It'd be the seven seed, right? Because the
seven seed would play the two seed.
Okay, so then they'd play the Ravens. Yeah, you're right. Their path implies they only are going to have to play one of Allen and Burrow.
Probably.
And Allen, Burrow, and Lamar.
There's a good chance. If Burrow gets there, and like you said, on Thursday, it's a huge game. By the way, did you see the end of the Bengals game? So Burrow throws...
He throws the pick six and went bananas?
No. So he throws a touchdown. They go up, I don't know if it was like 41-17 or whatever. It was late in the fourth quarter. He throws a touchdown, and they go up 38-17. It's a touchdown to Gesicki, who goes nuclear in that game.
Burrow throwing five touchdown passes and none to Ja'Marr Chase was not on my bingo card.
And Burrow, he throws the touchdown to Gesicki. He stumbles. He goes 47 yards. Burrow, they show him. He just like unclips his chin strap and just walks off the field, takes off his helmet, and just sitting on the sidelines like someone just punted his dog.
He's in full psychopath mode?
Yeah, like... It was as if he threw a touchdown pass to go to cut the deficit to 38-17 as opposed to go up 30. It looked like he was furious. And it was his fifth touchdown pass of the game.
No, Burrow, that's the thing. If the Bengals were winning more, Burrow would be the MVP. His numbers are insane.
They are perplexing this year.
They can't stop anybody.
They should have beat the Ravens. They should have beat the Chiefs. They open up the season with that inexplicable loss to the Patriots. The Commanders, we didn't know they would be this good. By the way, big trade today for the Commanders.
Ooh, boy.
But yeah, I mean, I'll say this. Al Michaels can't be grumpy the next 2 weeks. Bengals, Ravens.
I kind of want him to stick with the bit.
Eagles, Commanders, next two Thursday nights. We got some treats ahead of us.
I kind of want him to stick with the bit. I think he also gets mad. It's not just because he doesn't think he's on TV anymore. It's also, you know, he's having to travel. He's losing 2 days of golf a week. He's losing the Wednesday, and he's like, well, you can pick up the Sunday. It's like, Al was probably playing golf Sunday wherever they were anyway.
I mean.
All right, we gotta also talk about this.
Yeah.
This surprised me. So in real time, the Bucks score. They don't go for two. And, of course, the conversation last night, should they have gone for two? This surprised me on ESPN, because you know how we always make the joke? It's amazing how every time you see the ESPN analytics,
it always says go.
Yeah. There were four games this week that had teams score in the final minute and kicked an extra point to send the game to overtime. All four games, ESPN analytics said kick. Now, I think we always think of Todd Bowles as the ultimate non-analytics guy, but this has always been my problem with analytics. I understand their use, and I'm not someone that dismisses them. But how a game is going and how your team is going should factor in. You have the chance to go on the road and steal a game, and your team is banged up to hell. And you're going to need, like, that was a chance to steal a win. I don't get it. Now, there is the argument, what, there would have been 30-something seconds?
The Chiefs had all three timeouts, so they would have had four plays every single time, right, to get a first down. Because if you watched it, they didn't get the third and one, and they had to punt because you can't go for it there, and then the other team gets the ball.
Right.
I would look. I think you're absolutely right. I there's a little bit of like the AFC Championship game against the Bills where they get down the field in 11 seconds to kick a field goal, and they've got
13.
One of the better, they have one of the better kickers in the game. So they basically needed. They showed him what hitting like from 62 pregame.
Yes,
but to your point, you've now been swept by the Falcons. You need this game. Like, you need every game.
Yes.
And the Falcons are now two games ahead of you with the tiebreaker in that division. And the only way you're making the playoffs, more than likely, is to win this division. You're on the road at Kansas City. You just went down the field to take, to go for two, man. Like, I totally agree. Would Kansas City have kicked a game-winning field goal? I don't know. But I don't think you would have got criticized.
No, that's the other thing.
Not,
I think if they
you
go
had
for
not gotten the two, I don't think you would have. You could have said, we're on the road at Kansas City in the driving rain. And what happened? When the coin toss happened,
Baker looked like he had, like, had his
Baker's dog. Like, game over.
Yeah.
Yeah, Baker just, he throws his head up like, it's over. It was, it's like when the Chiefs, or excuse me, the Niners kicked the field goal in the Super Bowl. You're like, what are you, you're going to lose. Like, you just gave Superman the ball. Like, that's what makes Patrick Mahomes Patrick Mahomes. I get that the numbers aren't great, and he shouldn't be the MVP this year. He's thrown too many interceptions. But, like, when that dude gets the ball and he needs to score, he's going to score. And he did.
And he's never out of the game. So I know, so, you were on the air, and you're not a, like, I know you're not the world's biggest Manning cast guy, but Belichick was on there, and Peyton was asking him about, you know, what's it like going up against Mahomes, and he's like, well, we've had two score leads on him, you know, in two playoff games. One, we end up winning in overtime because the guy gets offsides. He's just like, how many ever points you have, it's usually not enough against Mahomes. And I was like, that's kind of the Patrick Mahomes story. I don't care if it's a low-scoring, like, 20-13 game. It's like, whatever you have, you probably don't have enough. You probably need more points.
When he doesn't, like, when he didn't win the game on that final drive, I was a bit surprised. Because that's just who he is. But I'll say this. If they were down one, I think they win. I think he figures out a way to get
they would have run different plays, but yeah, I mean, but
you would have been more desperate. You obviously have four plays to work with as opposed to three. But you still, he's Freddy Krueger. He's Jason. He's whatever. Like, you got to try to kill the bad guy. And they didn't. And when that coin toss was won by the Chiefs, I was in the kitchen, I was doing something, I just look over and I see Mahomes do the, you know, signal of like, we want the ball, and I look at Baker and he's like, yep, it's over.
It was the same look Josh Allen had when they scored with 13 seconds and he went to go do the coin toss.
Yeah.
We've all seen that look. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk the NFL trade deadline. As mentioned, the Commanders with a massive pickup that shores up their secondary. Also, we got some action tonight. We'll talk about it when we come back, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Tim, we got a little bit of breaking news from the NBA. The NBA suspended Joel Embiid 3 games for the altercation shoving a columnist in a post-game locker room. This is one of those things where it's like, I thought the column was out of line, but there's kind of the element of like, hey, man, you can't put your hands on him. I also, though, is this a punishment? Like, he just wants to sit out anyway.
Yeah, is he even playing, right?
I mean, yeah, I guess theoretically he could have returned this week. So Joel Embiid suspended 3 games for the altercation. All right, we had NFL trade deadline, and I think it's fair to say the biggest trade of the day. The Washington Commanders get Marshawn Lattimore in a 2025 fifth-round pick. They get him from the Saints, who will get a 2025 third-round pick, a fourth-round pick, and a sixth-round pick. It's a defense that desperately needs corners. Lattimore's only 28, so it's, you know what I mean? You got to think there's still plenty in the tank. To me, this felt like the most significant add that we saw all trade deadline, and a day that I felt like was trying to get billed as a big deal, and there were some moves, but to me, like, this was the one where I go, okay, that's something the Commanders really needed.
It's I think many of the listeners know, but it's worth repeating. I'm from this area. I'm from DC, right? And I grew up with this franchise. I worked for a radio station owned by the previous owner. This has been one of the most inept franchises for 2.5 decades in the NFL. They have not had a season with 11 wins in over 30 years. And this just, once again, is a move that makes sense. Like, wow.
It's like a completely different day.
And, you know, what's worth remembering for the Washington Commanders is that prior to the start of the season, they shipped off Jahan Dotson to the Eagles for a third-round pick. So the lesser of those 2 third-round picks, from my understanding, is the one going to the New Orleans Saints.
Yep.
And now you're getting a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback. Man, this is just a franchise that is on the ascent. Are they? And you know, this sets up to be a really intriguing NFC East race where your Giants and the Cowboys are out of it.
Yes, the Giants the most, the Cowboys now, because Dak goes to IR. I mean,
but yet they still made a trade today.
Yeah, so Mingo played at Ole Miss. I don't think I ever covered him. I don't know. The numbers for Mingo are not good, but there's also the caveat of, well, he was playing in Carolina. Like, the idea is they think that he's undervalued, underutilized. They gave up real assets for it. For him.
You have a fourth-round pick for him.
Yeah, and now granted, he was the 39th pick, I think, last year. But, you know, I think they saw it as, we believe that this guy's better than he is. But that was a surprising move to me.
Going back real quickly to Washington, I still think Philadelphia is the slight favorite, and the betting odds would say so, and they still have to play each other twice. I think Philly's slightly better, but I got to give Cliff Kingsbury credit. I think he's calling some really good games so far. I think Dan Quinn is a solid head coach. And I don't know if I could say the same about Nick Sirianni. I still think roster construction edge goes to the Eagles. But,
yep,
man, this is a franchise you have to remember. Under Ron Rivera, their drafts were an unmitigated disaster. Every which way. They have benched their first-round pick from a year ago at Emmanuel Forbes. They just cut Jamin Davis a couple weeks ago. He was their first-round pick in 2020, I think. Like, it's been really bad. And the fact that they've been able to cobble this together, and it helps that Jaden Daniels is the real deal. Like, this is a franchise that you saw the report come out, I think, to late last week, over the weekend, maybe, that, like,
I think it was Sunday.
Players are saying they want to go to Washington.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's not because they want to get paid like Albert Haynesworth. They want to go there because it's a legitimate up and coming franchise.
No, and I do think, though, the bigger lesson is if you don't have quarterback right, it's so hard. But, man, when you get quarterback right, it can just flip overnight.
Yeah. And, I mean, Brian Robinson was hurt this past weekend against the Giants. They, you know, Austin Eckler steps in. Chris Rodriguez has some decent carries. Like, if this defense can be good, I mean, they're going to the playoffs. It's just whether or not they'll be the winners of the NFC East or a wild card. But they're one of those teams where, you know, looking at the NFC, we just.
So I wanted to toss this up to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So I threw this out yesterday. If I said it's to get to the Super Bowl, not to win the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
would the first pick be the Lions?
Yes.
Right? Because it's the competitiveness of the AFC. There is also something there's a reason why we haven't seen anyone win a Super Bowl three times in a row. Like, we get it, they're going for history, but I mean, to me, when I'm watching the Lions, they look like they're playing at a different speed than everybody else in the NFC.
Now, I still hold out on the Niners because I'm a sucker, and I just think,
well, if McCaffrey actually comes back, like I've put it in the stance of, if McCaffrey comes back and I see it that he's back and he looks like McCaffrey, I will leave that door open. But they're also in this weird spot where the Rams are getting better and they've won the first matchup, but I think you're probably right. I think, to me, though, the team that I'm most worried about is Philly, because they look like they're getting it together. But I still think Detroit's way better than them.
Detroit, even though the counting stats weren't all that impressive, you watched that game and they dominated it. And it's one of the. It was kind of like what we talked about last hour with Louisville and Clemson, like. Clemson outgained them, and the Packers outgained them substantially, but it didn't really
not when
feel
it mattered.
Like, yeah, it felt like that was, those were some empty stats. Like, this game was over in the third quarter, and
no, it was over when the pick six before the half.
Yeah, good point. But here's the thing: they are in the driver's seat right now to get the home field. And I know Goff joked about it, and I think Quinn even mentioned or Campbell made a joke about it too, like playing outside. They're so much better indoors. And if this goes through Detroit, like, do you remember those games? It was a freaking zoo. Like, two playoff games, right? Because they get a bye.
Yep.
Two playoff games there, an NFC championship game in theory there. Oh, my God. That'll be out of control. So, look. They were right there on the doorstep to get to the Super Bowl a year ago. But yeah, I think Detroit is the team you can trust the most right now in the NFL to make it to the Super Bowl.
I mean, to me, it's simply because we know they can run the football. Goff is playing great, and like, they've got weapons all over the field. And yes, they've lost Hutchinson, but...
Well, they went out and got...
Zadarius Smith
today.
Yes.
It's a good addition. He's not Aiden Hutchinson, but
no,
he's good.
It's a good, solid pickup. Yeah. All right. We also have Maction tonight. I'm seeing disgusting weather throughout the Rust Belt.
Beautiful.
To me, the thing is, trying to research Maction, I think sometimes is an exercise in futility. I think more times than not, it's a gut. If I see the type of weather that I think I'm going to see, I feel like I'm just blindly laying the under, and I know they're going to be bad numbers.
Well, you've seen movement, right?
Yeah.
Central Michigan, Bowling Green. The most important thing happening in Michigan today,
yes,
is clearly happening in Mount Pleasant. 4-point move to the under on this one, Central Michigan and Bowling Green. Also, Bowling Green has taken a lot of money too. Bowling Green's much better.
The roster is much better
than Central Michigan. But I'll just, a word to the wise, don't bet a lot of money on Max.
Don't load the clip. It's like Fun Belt.
Have fun. You throw a couple bucks out there.
Just be happy it's back.
Yeah, it's something that when you get bogged down on, you know, particular states not giving us more information, just throw on the old Maction there.
Yeah. When does the playoff show start? 6 or whatever, 4 your time? 6 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah, 6 o'clock, I think, Central. And it'll probably be like 15 minutes in until we get a ranking.
All right, what's going to... Do you have a prediction of what will make people the most mad?
Penn State being ahead of Indiana?
I'm thinking it's going to be something with... I mean, I'm with you. Are they really going to put LSU ahead of A&M? They played it on the field.
Well, I thought they were going to put A&M over Notre Dame before A&M lost to South Carolina, which actually, as crazy as this sounds, I would have been okay with because A&M hadn't lost to Northern Illinois. I think they'll get most mad. I think Boise State is going to be underranked because they're 12 in the AP, and I think historically we have seen the G5s not get love, especially early on in the rankings. I think the two teams that are going to be the hot-button topics are BYU and Indiana, like I opened the show. Where are they going to be? And then also what we don't know is how much, like I said to start the show, like Notre Dame and the FPI is like 15th. Or is that strength of record? Whatever.
I think it's strength of record.
Like,
but by the way, strength of record is what they look at.
Is not what they look at?
It is what they look at.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. So, like, I think BYU's ahead of Indiana, and I think, all right, prediction's sure to go wrong. I'll say BYU's currently ninth in the AP. I'll say they're sixth tonight.
Okay.
And I'll say Indiana is below Penn State, and I think that'll get people really fired up.
All right. My cop-out's going to be, it's going to be something, there's going to be an SEC team that's ranked somewhere they shouldn't be, and that's what's going to get people the most mad.
I could also see, like, Army 25th or something like that, like super low because of their schedule.
Yeah, I can buy that. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, for today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. Have you seen DeAndre Hopkins' latest social media post?
No, I have not.
He took a screen grab of a picture of Tom Brady with Randy Moss hugging an embrace. The implication being, Mama, now that he's gone to the Chiefs, you know, Mahomes has his Randy Moss. I would also point out this to DeAndre. Does DeAndre know how that season ended?
Yeah, they lost in the Super Bowl to your boys.
Do you think the average person realizes Randy Moss doesn't have a title? Because I feel like we just assume if you played on the Patriots with Brady, at some point you got a title.
That is pretty, yeah.
No title for him. All right, do you have him action play or are you just going to sit it out?
I like Northern Illinois tomorrow.
Okay.
But I don't... If you can... Maybe I'll play the under in solidarity. Do you have a strong determination on either one of these unders? Is there going to be worse weather in Muncie or Kalamazoo or Mount Pleasant?
Both look bad. If you make me take one, I'll probably take the Kalamazoo one just because those offenses are worse. Like, I do think when Bowling Green gets into MAC play, they can move the ball a little bit. And you got Loeffler, baby.
Bowling Green almost beat A&M and Penn State this
year. Gave them both absolute scares. All right, my man, we'll talk to you on Friday.
Yes, sir.
He is, of course, Tim Murray of VSiN. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast show after the program ends. For Dennis, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.